Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And you will have to forgive me this week, as I may have to go for many, many drinks of water because my pipes are pretty much torched from a full weekend of petitioning as the personhood petition drive draws to a close here in Colorado, February 12th. This was our final weekend, so we were out at churches. I mean, we hit the Seventh-day Adventists on Saturday. We hit every Catholic, every Protestant you could possibly imagine. All today. Sunday. And so the pipes are a little trashed, but you'll have to bear with me. I have big news, breaking news. I believe I will be the first news source, either broadcast or on the internet, to break the news that Dr. James Dobson and his wife signed the personhood petition at a church down in Colorado Springs this morning. It's odd that we're trying to cover all these churches at the very end, and just by chance, he happens to be preaching at one of the churches or giving a talk. And one of the board members of Colorado Right to Life happened to go down there to collect signatures, and there he was, and he signed it. James Dobson has signed the personhood petition in Colorado. Now, if he would only send out an email, we could have finished this thing 4 months ago. Oh, well. I guess you can't have everything. Anyway, I spent my afternoon petitioning with two of the founders of the personhood movement, and it was fabulous. We got hundreds of signatures, and then after we finished, they asked if I wanted to have lunch, and I thought, wow, you know, how often do you get to have lunch with two of the founders of the personhood movement? And so I said, well, yeah, of course, I would love to have lunch. And so they said, well, there's a Middle Eastern restaurant right across the parking lot. Why don't we head over there? At which point I cringed. I always cringe at the mention of Middle Eastern food. And I'll tell you, I've spent a good bit of time in Israel and in India. And the food has not been, well, let's just say it hasn't been the highlight of the trip as far as I'm concerned. But I hadn't eaten in approximately 18 hours. And so I said, yes, I will. Let's do the Middle Eastern thing. Sounds great. Yeah. So we got over there and parked in front of this Middle Eastern restaurant, the Sultan Cafe, in lovely Arvada, Colorado. Parked there is a red Dodge Charger, which is one about the coolest looking car you can get, is a candy apple red 2009 Dodge Charger. Anyway, but the bumper was emblazoned with an Arabic phrase underlined by a sword. So I said to one of the founders of the personhood movement, I said, what do you think that says? He said, you will love our hummus or we will chop off your head. That was what he thought it might say. Anyway, but we went in and we ate, and I must say, I was pleasantly surprised by the quality of the gyros and the hummus, and the pita bread was just knockout. It was awesome. So there you have it. Breaking news. Doug McBurney has lunch with the founders of the personhood movement on the same morning James Dobson signs the Colorado personhood petition. Quite an exciting weekend. We're looking forward to a big celebration at the end of next week when we bring in enough signatures to get on the ballot, and we can all take a breath. And give our voice boxes a bit of a rest. I'll tell you what. I'm going to have one of those drinks of water right now. Oh, yeah. All right, now let's dive right into the news. We have very, very important happenings from around the world. Dateline Dubai from the Reuters Wire. A restaurant in Dubai has added a new entree to its menu, billed as a fat-free choice for carnivorous but health-conscious diners. It's the Camel Burger. Yes, the Camel Burger. It's about $5.50. And a restaurant called The Local House offers a quarter-pound camel burger loaded with cheese and smothered in burger sauce. Now, camel burger, I understand what's going on there. I might even be willing to try a camel burger. But what is burger sauce? That's what bothers me. You go over there to Dubai and someone says, would you like some burger sauce on your camel burger? It's like, well, I don't know what's in the camel sauce. I never heard of burger sauce. But that's okay. When I was in India, we were at a restaurant and they asked us if we wanted, well, we saw on the menu, New York corn kebab. And so my coworker, who had spent a good bit of her time in New York, asked the waiter, what is a New York corn kebab? And he went on about to describe it. And she said, well, you know, I never heard of one of those in New York at all. And so we tried them and they were horrible. Horrible. But let's get back to the important news here of the camel burger. Ali Ahmad Ismail, Local House assistant manager, told the Reuters reporter that the burger patties were fat and cholesterol free, but he declined to say how the outlet tenderized the tough camel meat. It's a trade secret, said Ahmad. let's see here. Is there anything else? Oh, at the restaurant, they suggest that you have your burger with fries or potato wedges, and it can be washed down with a soft drink or a camel milkshake. So you got the burger sauce, the camel milkshake. Those are the mysteries here in the story. The camel burger is pretty obvious what's going on there. And but frankly, I'm all for it. I would try a camel burger. So there's the important news out of the Middle East this week. Now let's jump into some serious stuff here out of the Justice File. Ladies and gentlemen, Dateline Columbus, Ohio, from the Columbus Dispatch newspaper. A Columbus man has been charged with killing a teenager who was out with friends throwing eggs at cars 3 years ago. Michael S. Gross is now charged with murder and tampering with evidence in the December of 2006 shooting of 14-year-old Danny Crawford, the aforementioned teenager throwing eggs. Now, Crawford was an eighth-grade student at the time. He was hanging out with two other boys, and one of the youths threw an egg at a sport utility vehicle. Well, the driver of the SUV chased the boys. A passenger got out and started shooting. And that's the end of the story. I mean, it's not the end of the story. Obviously, Michael Gross is going to go on trial for murder, as well he should. But a night of innocent teenage fun in the United States these days, and certainly not innocent to be throwing eggs at cars, but not a death penalty offense in my book. It ends in a horrible crime being committed, and that's the state of domestic tranquility. That brings us to the domestic tranquility file. Oh, by the way, Michael S. Gross, obviously the shooter, the murderer who killed the egg thrower, does not understand the principle of escalation of force. If someone throws an egg at you, you cannot shoot them. And he should be made an example of, and he should be executed for what he did. Now let's move on into the domestic tranquility file. An 8-year-old boy was found dead and his socialite mother near death at a luxury midtown Manhattan hotel last Friday morning in a possible murder-suicide attempt. Cops found a suicide note at the scene. This was the swanky Fifth Avenue Hotel, a 5-star hotel, located between Central Park and Rockefeller Center. Rooms there go from $600 to $7,000 a night. The woman who survived was apparently reportedly distraught over the end of her marriage. And at last report, she was listed in stable condition. Stable condition indeed. The child died. An 8-year-old boy. My. Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina. From the domestic tranquility file, a South Carolina man killed his ex-wife's attorney and then himself last Thursday. Jerry Dean Crenshaw shot Redmond Coyle, lawyer, several times last Wednesday afternoon in the parking lot behind the lawyer's office. Then he turned the 9mm handgun on himself and committed suicide. So divorce, murder, suicide, every day in the newspapers, every single day. That is the legacy of post-Christian America. It's a legacy of bloodshed and violence. Dateline, Madison, Alabama. A ninth grader was shot to death by another student last Friday at a North Alabama middle school. Todd Brown, 14 years old, was shot at about 1:45 in the afternoon. The suspected shooter was arrested inside the school, where police are regularly stationed, handily enough. The alleged shooter is also a ninth grader. The city school superintendent said churches were working with the school system to offer counseling throughout the weekend, and counselors will be at the campus on Monday. The superintendent said, quote, "We see this as a time to discuss, reflect, and also mourn this tragic event." You know, I see it as a time to get your kids out of the public schools, for crying out loud. If the teachers don't molest them or destroy their faith and destroy their minds slowly, they might just get shot to death, for crying out loud. And now, I didn't see this on the news, or this wasn't big news. This is just a single student shooting. These don't really make the cut for CNN and Fox News anymore. Just not enough carnage, I suppose. Anyway, if you're sending your children to the public schools, you are sinning against your children and against the living God of the universe, and you need to repent. Alrighty, now, let's move on through the domestic tranquility file. We wanted to do this first because I feel like the domestic tranquility file has been getting short shrift, and I want to make sure that you all understand that one of my jobs on this broadcast is to chronicle the degeneration of justice and domestic tranquility in America so that we can all gird ourselves and step up and demand justice from our governing officials. I mean, forget welfare and forget food stamps. What we want is justice from the government. At least that's what I want. Okay, Dateline Columbia, South Carolina. Authorities say that 71-year-old Frank Palazzo robbed his fourth bank last Monday, and that he was possibly desperate for money to keep his business afloat. Police were chasing his Jaguar down the state highway in Myrtle Beach after a bank robbery when Palazzo shot and killed himself. The car careened off the highway, but fortunately no one else was hurt. 71 years old. I mean, is this what we have to look forward to from the hippie generation as they age not so gracefully? They start exploding? I mean, 71, right? He could have been a hippie. Isn't that wild to think about? That that the elderly class that's supposed to deserve our respect and honor, there's a good bit of them that are a bunch of old, whacked-out hippies. And that's just scary to think about what's going to happen there. Okay, speaking of scary, let's go to the war file. Dateline Baghdad, Iraq. Iraqi officials say a female suicide bomber mingling among Shiite pilgrims in northern Baghdad has detonated an explosive belt, killing at least 54 people. Now, first of all, I want to take issue, as I quite often do, with the journalism graduates who write for the Associated Press. Do you notice how this story, how that first sentence was written? The female suicide bomber detonated an explosive belt, killing 54 people. So that's, it bothers me. There's a phrase here that separates the killer from the act of killing. It doesn't say that a female suicide bomber killed 54 people. It says she detonated an explosive belt. And that is what killed. I mean, that statement implies that it's the suicide belt that killed all those people, and all she did was detonate it. Okay, it's just a bastardization of the English language that I don't appreciate from the journalism students out there who work for the Associated Press. But I was surprised again at this story. I didn't really hear about this in the television or radio news. Not that I was that tuned in this week, I must say, but I don't know. A female suicide bomber blowing up 50 people seems like big news. I mean, it should get a blurb, I would think. Anyway, the bomber struck last Monday while she was lining up with other women to be searched at a checkpoint. So a lot of good searching people at checkpoints does. That just lines them all up so she can get them with one explosive belt. See, this goes back to my theory that we really can't prevent terrorist killers who are dedicated in their hearts to even a suicidal fanaticism dedicated to killing us. We simply can't stop them on a case-by-case basis. We can't make it so they can't do it. We just can't do that. That's why we've got to strike fear into the hearts of the peoples of these lands unto the third generation. And that means making war against them so that their civilian populations will cringe in fear when they think of America, and they will no longer harbor the terrorists that come here to kill us. And that's my theory of winning the so-called war on terror, or what I would call the war against Islamo-fascist terrorists. I suppose that's what I would call it. That's the secret. It's not body scans and cavity searches and lineups at checkpoints. That's not going to get it done. It's striking fear into the hearts of both the terrorists and the civilian populations within which these terrorists operate. And that means making severe and terrifying war against these peoples whenever they strike us. And you can go back a few shows, and you can listen to my theory in detail. Let's see, just to finish this story out, hundreds of thousands of pilgrims were going to Karbala to remark another revered Shiite holy day. These Muslims, they've got holy days just left and right. It's like every other day is a holy day. I mean, was this a Shiite holy day? Was it just a holy day? Was it a holier day? Or was it possibly the holiest day? It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney, and that's my theory of defeating the Islamo-fascist terrorists in a nutshell, and we'll get to more of that, but let's continue. I'm sure we'll get to more of it because there unfortunately are going to be more Islamo-fascist terrorist attacks on their way, and it worries me, and it's worrisome, to say the least. All right. But let's move on through the war file because there is other news. Dateline Timirgara, Pakistan. Pakistan's Taliban claimed responsibility for a bombing last week that killed three U.S. soldiers outside a girls' school. I said a girls' school. So here's what we're up against, ladies and gentlemen, fellow citizens of Western civilization. We're up against maniacs willing to strap bombs to their women and then blow up schools that are filled with their young girls, their own daughters. This is terrifying. That's why they're called terrorists, because what they do is so terrifying and so dastardly and so diabolical and so evil. They blew up a girls' school, and three children and a Pakistani soldier were killed along with three U.S. soldiers. Now, Pakistanis are a little bit upset that they're asking, what are U.S. soldiers doing in Pakistan? And, you know, it's like I said last week, if Barry Ho, President of the United States, also known as Barack Hussein Obama, if the President of the United States is doing something right, I give him credit. And if he does have special forces operating inside of Pakistan, I'm glad he does. And I'm willing to give him credit for doing the right thing. He simply doesn't take it far enough. We don't just need special forces. When someone's willing to bomb and kill you with their women and children, and kill their own women and children alongside your soldiers, this is a formidable enemy who must be dispatched with extreme prejudice. And these bombers are tolerated within these civilian populations. And I'm no war monger. I hate the idea of war. But war it has come to us, and we must dispatch the enemy with much more prejudice than we are doing, and we must convince their civilian populations not to harbor them. That's all there is to it. All right. I guess I'm beating a dead horse on that. I just need to move on. Dateline Detroit, a Muslim prayer leader accused of encouraging his followers to commit violence against the U.S. government was shot 20 times during an FBI raid at a suburban warehouse outside of Detroit last fall. Way to go, FBI. That is great news. The FBI says agents were trying to arrest Abdullah. Let's see, what's his whole name? Luqman Amin Abdullah. At a Dearborn warehouse, when he resisted and fired a gun at them, at which time they dispatched him with extreme prejudice, and I'm thankful that they did. Now, Abdullah, who's also known as Christopher Thomas, was the imam of a small mosque in Detroit that served mostly black Muslims. At the time, he and 11 allies were being pursued for federal crimes, chiefly conspiracy to sell stolen goods in an FBI sting operation. So here's another truth, another truism about our enemy in the war against Islamic terrorism, and Islamic terrorists, I should say, is that they're basically common criminals, hell-bent on taking over governments, including the government of Detroit and eventually the government of your neighborhood. And so, as I said, not to put too fine a point on it, they must be dispatched with extreme prejudice. Wouldn't you agree? If you don't agree, well, post something up there and tell me you don't agree. All right. Now, from the idle chatter file, we've got some good news. This shouldn't be in the idle chatter file. This should be in the good news file. Let's change the name of that. That's the good news file. We don't get a lot of good news around here, but here is some. Dateline Margate, New Jersey. Authorities in southern New Jersey say a 7-year-old boy helped save his 10-year-old brother, grabbing the older sibling after he fell through the ice and holding on to him until help arrived. Tristan Levine kept hold of his brother Sage until police got there and pulled the boy from the frigid lagoon. And to top that, I don't know that you can top that, but to make this even more fascinating, a resident's dog alerted her to trouble on the bay, and she called police, who arrived quickly enough to save the boy. It's like, wow, a dog, too. We've got a little brother saving a big brother, and we've got a dog going, woo, 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 danger. It's just, I mean, that's a great story. That's a great story out there in Margate, New Jersey. So there is still good in the world. So don't give up all hope, ladies and gentlemen. And the good in the world is well, predominantly amongst the children, I suppose. And what an awesome story. That's great. Now, into the idle chatter file. This is from the Telegraph over in London. This is a dateline of Rhode Island here. And you've all heard about the story, right? The cat that has predicted the deaths of the nursing home patients. The cat named Oscar. You've all heard the story. The cat is generally unsociable. They say he was adopted as a kitten at this nursing home in Providence, Rhode Island. This particular nursing home specializes in caring for people with severe dementia, final stages, you know, folks who are close to death. Well, the cat's kept outside the room of a dying patient, and if you try to keep him out, he'll scratch the door, and he seems to go and curl up with people who are, you know, within hours of death. And he has a remarkable record of predicting the deaths of nursing home patients. Well, the doctor there, he says, and I don't know that I've heard this reported. Everybody's reported this as if it's just some cutesy story. But the doctor notes that he believes that like dogs, which can reportedly smell some cancers, that this cat is able to detect ketones with the cat's sense of smell. Ketones, the distinctly odored biochemicals given off by dying cells. So that's how Oscar is able to tell that these people are about to die, is their body is shutting down and they're producing ketones. And just, what a creepy story. Why did I even... Oh, you know, the thing is we had a number of cat stories, and I thought it was fascinating about the ketones. That's all. So I wanted to bring that to you in case you hadn't gotten that little tidbit in the Entertainment Tonight segment that you may have heard about the story on. All right. From Dummerston, Vermont, the Associated Press reports, police in Vermont say a 75-year-old woman trying to rescue a cat stuck on a highway's median was hit by a car and killed. Yeah, police say that Cynthia Long had stopped on the shoulder of Interstate 91 near Dummerston on Sunday to try to help the cat, and she was hit while walking across the passing lane. And that's just sad. Another cat story that I probably should have left aside for this week. But wait. Dateline Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. A northeastern Pennsylvania woman is heading to trial on animal cruelty charges for marketing gothic cats on the internet. The cats had ear and neck piercings. Yes. Now, the woman accused here is a 35-year-old dog groomer. Aha! A dog groomer! Aha! Wouldn't you know it, a dog groomer would be piercing and tattooing kittens. Anyway, her name's Holly. She's going to go to trial in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania this coming month. Prosecutors say she inflicted pain on the cats to make money. Her attorneys say she didn't act maliciously. She's just a goth chick. I mean, chances are she probably pierced her own face, ears, neck, nose, tongue. You know? So she may beat the rap. Because they'll put a bunch of morons on the jury who'll say, well, you know, she did it to herself before she did it to the cats. Anyway, I probably should have left the cat stories out. I don't know why I was fascinated with the cat stories. I have certain friends of mine who I know don't like cats. And I'm ambivalent. I can tolerate cats. And I do appreciate them if I'm in a place with a rodent population. So I'm attracted to cat stories for that reason, I suppose. All right, but let's move on into much more serious news, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Denver, Colorado. This is from the Washington Times. States and municipalities are faced with severe budget shortfalls, as we all know. And, you know, we're in this big recession. Well, state legislatures and governors are trying to raise money without raising taxes. That's right. At least without technically raising taxes. Yeah, they're calling them fee hikes, increased penalties, increased fines, and the ever-popular elimination of tax exemptions. Yeah. So according to the Washington Times, the National Conference of State Legislatures says that 35 states and Puerto Rico are facing deficits. That was Freudian. Deficits, I said, for fiscal 2011. States raised taxes and fees by almost $24 billion in 2010 this year, nearly triple the increases the previous year, and more increases are likely to come. So what do liberals do when there's a financial crisis? They raise taxes. That's why I have a fear that the worst is not yet behind us. You know, I'm not a doom and gloom kind of guy, but because of the way these politicians are acting, raising taxes in the midst of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression, I fear that perhaps the worst isn't behind us. And it was pretty lousy, ladies and gentlemen. 2009 was one of the worst economic years of my entire career, my entire life. I mean, it was awful. And the worst may not be past because of these politicians. All right, now, on Monday, the Colorado House of Representatives approved 8 bills eliminating tax exemptions, ranging from online sales and farm equipment to restaurant napkins and plastic foam containers. Restaurant napkins and foam containers, wow. Let's see, one progressive, that's a popular term these days, a progressive named Allen, who's the president of Progress Now Colorado. He made a statement after these socialist politicians decided to close what they call tax loopholes. He made a statement. He says, it's time for corporate and other special interests to pay their fair share. And suspending a small fraction of the over $2 billion Colorado loses every year in corporate loopholes and giveaways is not too much to ask. That's according to progressive Alan Franklin, president of Progress Now Colorado. So a progressive apparently believes that when the government allows you to keep any of your money, that's a giveaway. Second and heading into more excitement as we dive into the news of the week and look at it, focus upon it through the lens of original thought. I am so glad to have you with us this week in the show that is growing by leaps and bounds every week. We're adding listeners. People hear the show. A majority of them freak out and just can't take it. But some of you are sticking with us, and we sure do appreciate it. Let's dive on into the culture file, which is probably our most popular file. It's at least it's my favorite, even though it can be sort of depressing. Now, we just talked about taxes and the budget-strapped state of the states. And, well, here's the fruit of that from USA Today. Gravel roads are emerging as a sign of financial struggle in a growing number of rural towns across the country. High costs and tight budgets have prompted communities to convert their cracked asphalt roads back to gravel. So it's not just that we may be moving into another depression. It's going to be like the depression because we're going to have dirt roads. By the way, I don't know if I've said this on the air. Do you know what World War I was called before World War II? It was called the Great War. And we call the Great Depression the Great Depression. And we call the Great Depression the Great Depression. Just food for thought is all I'm saying. With the socialists and the progressives controlling things, the vast majority of things. Anyway, by the way, speaking of these gravel roads, where's my flying car? I mean, it's 2010. I remember thinking this back in 2000. Where's my flying car? Because when I was a kid back in the 70s, in the 80s, we were supposed to be, you know, with the flying cars by now. I mean, it's the 21st century, for crying out loud. I wonder what happened. I wonder who dropped the ball on the flying cars. I wonder if not having flying cars is a result of our government and Western civilization in general, of the dehumanization and murder of an entire class of citizen. I wonder if it was one of those citizens who could have designed and built my flying car. But he was dehumanized and murdered by liberal democratic governments throughout the Western world. Yeah, that's what's been happening, folks. We've dehumanized and murdered an entire class of citizens to a degree that is unmatched in all of human history. All of human history pales in comparison to the amount of citizens who've been dehumanized and murdered by liberal democratic governments since the 1960s. Anyway, and so we don't get our flying cars. And that's just one of the side effects. And that's just a minor annoying side effect. There's also the fact that, it's just produced a massive amount of bloodshed, murder, deceit, hypocrisy, and just all around wickedness and evil in our culture. And it's made the hearts of the parents turn away from their children. And that's what's scarier even than the Muslim fanatics willing to blow themselves up, is the liberal democratic suicidal social democrats who control most of Western civilization. And I am dedicated to fighting them with all that is in my being. All right, let's move on into the religion file. From Haiti, from the Telegraph over in London, Max Bouvier is Haiti's supreme master of voodoo. And he alleges that his faith's opponents have deliberately prevented much-needed help from reaching followers of the voodoo religion. Yeah. He says the evangelicals are taking everything for themselves. The Christians are apparently out-hustling the voodoo practitioners on the ground as it relates to aid there in Haiti. Maybe it's Bouvier. I believe it's Bouvier. I said Bouvier, but I'm not sure of my pronunciation of French. Perhaps someone can correct me. I think now it's Bouvier. He's a 75-year-old Sorbonne-educated biochemist, and he was speaking to reporters about a convoy of aid that arrived at his hometown. The first convoy had just arrived on February 2nd, weeks after the earthquake, at his hometown of Mariani. The first convoy to reach his village contained 400 sacks of rice from the World Food Program, and it was mobbed by hundreds of hungry voodoo believers. Yeah. He said, Mr. Bouvier says it's the first delivery, and it took a couple of weeks fight to get that for the voodoo people. Last weekend, hundreds of voodoo Hungans, who are, that's a voodoo priest, they gathered in the northern town of Genovese to plan how to react to the earthquake that left, over 200,000 people dead. So these voodoo priests, 2 weeks after the earthquake, they're getting together and planning how to react. Well, what do you expect, man? I mean, you've been shaking chicken bones for 2 weeks trying to do something magical, and finally you figured out, well, we better organize and try to beat the Christians to some of this rice. That's just sad. Anyway, bad religion. It's bad for you. It'll even kill you. Voodoo believers, by the way, worship hundreds of spirits called Iwa. And they also believe that trees have spirits. What else here? Let's see. One Monique Henri, who's a 36-year-old Haitian wearing a cross around her neck, she said, quote, the earthquake happened because people were sinners, so God was angry because people did wrong. That's what she says. She thinks the earthquake happened because people are sinners and God was angry. By the way, according to the Telegraph report, Christians have also been inundating radio stations, asking anyone who has committed a crime to confess, thereby saving the nation from future disasters. So, obviously, what we learn here is that superstition is not only confined to the voodoo community, but it's also very popular in the Christian community. Perhaps they've never read the book of Luke, where Jesus tells people that bad things happen because bad things happen. They happen by chance. And God's not angry, and he's not sending down lightning bolts or earthquakes on anyone. That's superstitious. But what do you expect from voodoos, Christians, people who don't really have a relationship with God, haven't read the Bible, and don't understand that it really makes sense and it's logical? Well, they end up being superstitious, and it's frankly embarrassing for the Christians. Not for the voodoo people. I mean, they shake chicken bones and spill blood around. I mean, you know, you expect them to be superstitious. It's voodoo after all. But it's the Christians who are embarrassing. But at least the Christians know how to organize to get their rice down there. Let's see. Mr. Bouvier, his grand house is the Paris del Mariana, is a voodoo temple where followers dance around a totem pole. However, since the earthquake, he has halted all ceremonies. Not that he doesn't believe in his religion, but he just doesn't want to push it in case it turns out that it is a pagan religion and it's making God mad. He's just not going to push it. Discretion is the better part of valor, I suppose, in that case. All right, now on into the religion file. Dateline Denver, Colorado. The Air Force Academy has set aside an outdoor worship area for pagans, Wiccans, Druids, and other earth-centered believers. Yeah, a double circle of stones has been designated for the groups who want to worship the earth. One of these earth worshipers, Technical Sergeant Brandon Longcrier, he says being with nature and connecting with it is kind of the whole point. He describes himself as a pagan. By the way, the two circles of stones, a double circle of stones, were moved to a hilltop last year because erosion had threatened to make them unstable in their previous location. Well, Cruz arranged them in two concentric circles because they thought it would be a pleasant place for cadets to relax. Well, when Longcrier, the pagan, and Academy chaplains were looking for an outdoor worship space, they discovered that it already existed in the form of the circle stones. So this is one of the advantages of being a religion, you know, sort of a nondescript, amorphous religion, like just pagan. You know, you don't need a lot of structure. You could just be stumbling around in a field and find a church. Hey, some rocks. Hey, you know, this is great. What a convenient religion paganism must be. Now, let's see. One of the Academy's chaplains designated the space as an effort to foster religious tolerance. No criticism of the new worship space has been noted. The reporters over at the Associated Press, they're surprised that there's been no criticism. You know, as if some evangelicals or some Baptists are going to go burn the place down or steal their rocks or blow up a gathering of pagans and druids. You know, they're just shocked that the Christians haven't. I mean, as if the Christians, you know, blow people up and steal people's rocks. We don't care if you worship the rocks. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. Worship the rocks, you moron. We might make fun of you. We might mock you. And we might tell our children that you're idiots. And that's what really makes them mad. They want our children to honor their paganism. But we love our children, so we inoculate them against stupidity whenever we can. And we make fun of the pagans. And that's what the pagans hate. The pagans hate that Christians make fun of them more than they hate that Muslims blow them up. Yeah. Yeah. Imagine that. Talk about being mentally, spiritually twisted. Anyway, let's see. The pagan says, well, I'm not going to say that there's criticism coming. But so far we haven't had any real issues. By the way, the Academy has about 4,000 cadets. This pagan said that he has 15 to 20 cadets have shown an interest in Earth-centered beliefs. So paganism not exactly flourishing down at the Air Force Academy. I suppose we could be thankful for that. Anyone is welcome to visit the new worship site, but it should be treated as a religious structure, said the pagan. And he plans a formal dedication in March. But again, he doesn't really have any solid set standards or I have to have a drink of water. I'm sorry. All right. Doesn't have a whole lot of ceremonies all laid out, you know, because he's just kind of a generic pagan. So could be March, could be the winter solstice, whatever works out, you know. Pretty handy being a pagan. All right. Now on into the culture file. An update on the Monkgay trial. Yes, you've heard of the Scopes Monkey trial. Well, out in California, they just completed the Monkgay trial. Dateline San Francisco, the U.S. Supreme Court may have stopped broadcasts of California's same-sex marriage trial, but that has not prevented filmmakers from reenacting it for the internet. That's right. Two Los Angeles-based filmmakers have used transcripts, bloggers in the courtroom, and professional actors to help recreate the trial. The first 12 episodes covering each day of the trial are already up on YouTube. Filmmaker John Ireland says the goal was to allow Americans to judge the constitutionality of Proposition 8, which restricted marriage, oddly enough, to one man and one woman. The filmmaker and another fellow filmmaker, John Ainsworth, they opposed the ban. So they're for boys with boys and all like that. And so they've, you know, this is the 21st century version of Inherit the Wind, I suppose. I wonder how true they were to the trial transcripts there on YouTube with the Monkgay trial. I suppose we'll wait and see, because it's up there for all the world to see. On into the culture file, from the public school files, Dateline New York, Joseph Galata, teacher, told two of his students, age 9 and 10, to settle an argument with a classroom fight in Queens. One of the students suffered a cut lip, and the other sustained a bruised and swollen head. When the teacher sent one of the boys to the school nurse a little bit later, he told the student to lie and say he was hurt by bumping into another student. The nurse got suspicious, and now the teacher and a teacher's aide, who prosecutors say witnessed the incident, are charged with two counts of endangering the welfare of a child, a misdemeanor. If convicted, each faces a maximum of 1 year in jail. Now, I'm sure you've heard about this in the conservative press. I haven't had a chance to listen to all your favorites, Rush Limbaugh, Hugh Hewitt, Michael Savage. Who else would have talked about this? Anyway, all of Neil Bortz, who am I forgetting? Dennis Prager. I'm sure they all talked about this story, and they just thought it was ridiculous that these teachers were being charged for doing something that's basically as fundamental a part of Americana as anything you could imagine. Two boys get into an argument, and a good teacher tells them to settle it with a fist fight. Well, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That is something for the boys' parents to do. I'm not against it in theory, but I'm against a public employee, a bureaucrat, a teacher carrying out what should be carried out by the children's parents, for crying out loud. All right. More from the public school file in the culture file. A former social study teacher's out in New Jersey there. Her name's Megan LaBoy. She's a former social studies teacher. She's pled guilty to theft by deception, admitting she received hundreds of dollars in donations from her students during the 2008-09 school year. The students were told they would receive extra credit for donations and the cash would go to charities. But LaBoy, the teacher, kept the money. And let's see, LaBoy will likely get probation when she's sentenced, but she will also be barred from holding public employment or public office in New Jersey, which seems kind of odd. It seems like she's eminently qualified, especially in New Jersey, to be a politician. Are back. Now, speaking of the public schools and fighting and all that, wait a minute, go Steve. Oh, Stevie's gone. Well, we did what we could with Stevie. Stevie is gone, and it is sad. All right, now, speaking of the public schools, as I was saying, and fighting and all of that, I got a story here from New Rochelle, New York. A teenage girl, was involved in a fight with another teenager, and, well, the fight apparently appeared on the internet, up on YouTube, and now authorities have discovered similar videos, girl-on-girl fights, that are published and broadcast up on YouTube. If you search girl fight on YouTube, you'll get a quarter of a million videos that are up there. Shocking, is it not? Anyway, educators... Public school educators, alleged educators, report that about 80% of school fights are now girl against girl in the public schools. And some experts believe the trend is partly fueled by the internet. Those are alleged experts, if they believe it's fueled by the internet. Yeah. Yeah. But let's see if we can decipher what might be going on here. We have a spokesgirl for a group that tries to prevent girl-on-girl fights, a cyber safety group, they call themselves, Teen Angels. Their spokesgirl says, people want attention from it. They want to be on the internet. They want to be, like, famous, and they're willing to, like, go to any cost to, like, do that, you know, to, like, be famous. That's the problem. That's what the spokesgirl said for Teen Angels, the cyber safety group. Dr. Jennifer Harstein, a psychobabbleologist, says that kids are exposed to so many violent images these days, parents need to enforce a reality check. She says, Know what your kids are looking at and really open the dialogue to discuss what it is, why it is, how they feel about it. Do they think it's okay? Ask a lot of questions, really probing, instead of being punitive and saying, you better not do this ever. Now, Dr. Harstein said, go from there and encourage your kids to report inappropriate videos. So Dr. Harstein, a psychobabbleologist, and I'm not sure exactly how high a degree she may or may not hold, but she's basically giving advice to parents for which she should be slapped across the face at the very least, and said, you stupid woman, please shut your mouth. So if your kids are being exposed to violent images, first of all, you are falling down as a parent. You're not getting the job done. And I know there are many of you out there who say, oh, Doug, you know, you can't prevent it these days. You know, these kids today with the internet and the cell phone and the YouTube, all of that. Doug, you're being unrealistic. All right. Well, we'll just see. I got three daughters, you know, so you'll be able to judge me as to how well I do at preventing my daughters from having a desire to be exposed to violence and girl-on-girl fights and all the garbage that's going on in the culture. One of the keys is to keep them out of the public schools. Not to put too fine a point on that, but that's one of the keys. And it's also to control what they're able to do online and with their phone and their whatever they've got there. And it can be done, and I intend to prove that it can be done. And maybe someday I'll write a book on how you can do it too. But it'll be too late for you by then. So if you've got kids, I don't care if they're 2 or 3 or 13. I mean, if you need help, I suppose I could try to help you. I don't have time to help everybody, but I could do my best. Because I feel really sorry for so many parents out there who are clueless as to how to raise kids. It's unbelievable. But chances are your parents were clueless too, and that didn't help. All right, I don't want to do any more on the psychobabbleologist. We're running out of time. I'm really sorry for that. I'll leave aside the plastic surgery story. Here we go. This is from the really ironic file, Dateline Ljubljana, Slovenia. A Slovenian man who saved his three dogs from being put down for attacking humans was himself mauled to death by those very dogs. Yeah, 4 years ago, the three bull mastiffs attacked and seriously injured a passerby. Now, imagine that. I've never heard of a dog called a bull mastiff, but that sounds scary. Anyway, the bull mastiffs seriously injured a passerby outside their owner's house. The dogs spent years in custody, but when one of them attacked a dog handler in custody, authorities ordered that the dogs be put down. Well, the owner, who was a doctor, succeeded last June in a legal appeal to get the dogs back. So he got his dogs, who attacked someone, then attacked someone in jail, and he got them out, and the dogs attacked the man in his garden last Tuesday, killing him before police could arrive. All three dogs were put down following the attack with no further comment from the owner, and apparently no appeals are expected, interestingly enough. All right, let's see. Barack Obama has a gay agenda and a green agenda. Okay, the headline is enough. You already know all about that. Sarah Palin at the Tea Parties. I just don't know. I don't think I can do a good enough Sarah Palin voice to do this. She wrote an article on why she made the speech out at the Tea Party convention. And in her article, she says, from the town halls last summer to the protests and marches in the fall to the game-changing recent elections, the soul of the Tea Party is the people who belong to it. Sarah, the whole game change, I mean, that term, just come on. Just stop with that, okay? Thank God for the Tea Party movement. I look forward to meeting some of these great Americans this weekend. Those who are part of the Tea Party movement are misunderstood. Those who portray this movement as a commercial endeavor rather than the grassroots uprising that it is, they don't understand the frustration of everyday Americans feel when they see their government mortgaging their children's future with reckless spending. So what I don't get about Sarah, and I know the voice isn't that good, but my pipes are shot, okay? Give me a break. She talks about the reckless spending, and the Tea Partiers seem to be obsessed with the reckless spending, but they fail to notice that at the foundation of the reckless spending, at the foundation of all of the ills of our government, is the dehumanization and murder of an entire class of our citizens, ladies and gentlemen. How long can a government respond to the needs of the people and adequately carry out the responsibilities of government when they have allowed the dehumanization and murder of an entire class of citizens on an order that makes the communist mass starvations and the Chinese slaughters of their own people on an order of magnitude that dwarfs those? How long can a government last? I wish Sarah would come around because I want to like Sarah. She says, I'm an American I'm committed to limited government, common sense, and personal responsibility. Sarah, stand up for the people who are being murdered first, and maybe we'll follow you. Anyway, a tempest in a teapot, perhaps, this whole Tea Party movement. All right, Lech Walesa has a warning for America. He says the United States doesn't lead morally and politically anymore. The world has no leadership. The United States was always the last resort and hope for all other nations. There was the hope whenever something was going wrong, one could count on the United States. Lech Walesa says, today we lost that hope. Now, I'm not sure what happened on February 1st for Lech Walesa to make this statement. Maybe he was talking about the missile shield. I'm not sure. But, well, he pretty much nails it. Thank you, Mr. Walesa. All right. Let's see. This headline off of the Drudge Report is just annoying to me. A pill that'll help you live to 100. Now, the article isn't really about that because there is no pill. But scientists have identified 3 super genes. People born with these genes are 20 times more likely to reach 100 years old. Even being overweight or a heavy smoker doesn't stop a third of those with these genes from living to 100. Researchers are working to produce a drug that can mimic the genetic benefits. So what does Drudge do, and what does the newspaper here, the Daily Express over in London, they put up a headline, pill that will help you live to 100. I mean, it's just ridiculous headline. It just annoys me. Lead scientist there, Nir Barzilai, that's the lead scientist, Dr. Nir Barzilai, he says the advantage of finding of a gene that involves longevity is we can develop a drug that will imitate this gene. If we can imitate that, then long life can be terrific. Dr. Nir Barzilai. Are all the doctors becoming Indian? Is there some kind of rule now to get into medical school? You have to be Indian? Did I miss a memo on that? It just seems that way. All right, now we've got personhood news. Up in Edmonton, Saskatchewan, an Alberta court in Queens bench has ordered an Edmonton hospital not to remove a ventilator that is keeping a 3-month-old baby, Isaiah May, alive until a court hearing can be heard on his medical condition. Physicians at the hospital had planned to take little Isaiah off life support last Wednesday because they believe he has no chance of recovering from brain damage. But the judge has ordered the hospital to maintain the status quo until a full hearing can be held on the baby's care. Yeah. Let's see here. In a letter dated January 13th, the clinical director for the neonatal intensive care unit told the parents that Isaiah's physicians believe that removing the child from the ventilator is medically reasonable, ethically responsible, and appropriate. But the Mays hope someone may be able to help Isaiah. That's what they hope. That's what the parents hope. But perhaps that someone was dehumanized and murdered sometime between 1965 and today. Perhaps that person is not on the earth, the person who could have helped Isaiah. Rebecca, the mother, says her son's improving. She says his eyes dilate, he opens his eyes, he moves his limbs, and he's growing. He's gaining weight, he's living. The doctors told us he would never do any of these things. Pray for Isaiah. Pray for his mom. Pray for his doctors. And pray for that judge. Dateline London, England. Top bioethicist Wesley J. Smith says a new study showing active brain activity in patients who are supposedly in a vegetative state or a minimally conscious state has a bearing on the Terri Schiavo case. He says the judge who allowed her husband to kill her should have ordered similar tests. The study found that patients in such unconscious states were able to respond mentally to yes and no questions by thinking of different things that activate brain activity in certain areas. The patients showed they were very aware because they could answer all sorts of personal questions and do so accurately. The doctor says, indeed, when it was clear that Terri would be lying in bed for a year pending appeals, the family begged Judge Greer to permit sophisticated brain scanning that had never been used on her before. He recalled, it couldn't have hurt her, and it might have shown something. But stubbornly, Judge Greer refused. Bioethicist Wesley J. Smith says, I will go to my grave believing the judge knew what he didn't want to know. He said that thanks to Judge Greer's intransigence, we will never know what her brain scan would have shown. Well, we might know on Judgment Day, but we'll never know on this earth. That's a fact. The bioethicist worries that the study will be ignored by the bioethics community, and it won't have the kind of impact it should. He says, the bioethics mainstream has rejected the equality and sanctity of human life for the so-called quality of life ethic. He said it began with the odious advocacy of Joseph Fletcher in the Hastings Center report back in 1972, claiming that the inability to communicate meant that one had lost humanhood, now called personhood. Thus today, not only unconscious but conscious patients are dehydrated to death in all 50 states, and it is shrugged off as medical ethics.
Wow.
Ultimately, for bioethicist Wesley J. Smith, conscious or unconscious people should not have to earn the right to receive basic sustenance. What we did to Terri Schiavo was a blight on the legal system and bioethics. Pretending otherwise won't make that stain go away.
Wow.
So new evidence, new medical evidence, new studies prove. See, we don't know what we don't know, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we have to draw a line at dehumanizing and killing anyone. Because we don't know what we don't know. I was in Florida. I tried to bring Terri Schiavo water. I was arrested and put in jail for trying to save her life, along with dozens of others. Because we just knew she was being murdered because we have a relationship with God and we understand right and wrong and truth, and we knew she was being murdered. And now the science will continue to come out on our side, and unless the governing officials dehumanize and kill us, the truth will prevail. All right. So I've got one more story here. We do have a lot of important stuff here, ladies and gentlemen. Military hospitals apparently have been ordered to carry the morning after pill. Have you heard this story? Yeah. Officials at the Pentagon have announced military hospitals will now be required to carry Plan B and Next Choice, a pair of drugs referred to as morning after pills for their ability to prevent, or as some contend, to terminate a pregnancy. Now, this is a WorldNet Daily article. How do they write some contend that it terminates a pregnancy? Everyone knows that these pills terminate pregnancy. They prevent a fertilized egg from implanting, and therefore they kill a person. Anyway, Defense Department officials have offered no assurance that medical doctors in the military will have the right of conscience of refusing to administer the drugs. The Department of Defense Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee voted 13-2 to issue the abortifacient drugs to the sluts in the military who get themselves knocked up and then want to kill their babies. Not to put too fine a point on it, ladies and gentlemen, but that's what I do. All right, now, here we go. From Morristown, New Jersey, in case you'd given up all hope, a New Jersey man accused of shooting and killing his African gray parrot with a BB gun because its screeching annoyed him while he was watching a NASCAR race has been indicted on an animal cruelty charge. That's right, he's not going to get away with it. The charge carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a $15,000 fine for shooting and killing his pet parrot. Dennis Zeglin allegedly shot the parrot Well, the parrot's not allegedly dead. It's dead. But anyway, Zeglin shot the parrot 3 times back on June 7th, and his wife called police. Zeglin's attorney says that his client was intoxicated at the time and afterward received treatment for his alcoholism. Well, that's just great. A lot of good that does the bird. All right. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, let me thank KGOV, KGOV Radio, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Personhood Colorado, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.